This is a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on Building Bridges, a tribute to author, playwright, actor, and political activist, the great Ossie Davis. But first,
a massive assault on the rights of federal government workers. Recently, the Department of Homeland Security issued new regulations which strip meaningful collective bargaining and civil service rights from over 110,000 civilian employees. There are plans to extend these regulations to all civilian workers. The Department of Defense, which has over 700,000 civil service workers, is next on the hit list. Joining us now is Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, which is one of the many federal employees unions representing workers under attack in the Department of Homeland Security.
Colleen, why don't you give us a short overview of the workers who are in your union and then proceed to tell us a bit about the proposed regulations that would affect 15,000 workers of your members in the Department of Homeland Security.
NTEU represents 150,000 federal employees in 30 federal agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security. We represent 15,000 employees in the Department of Homeland Security who do the frontline work at our borders, our airports, our seaports, protecting our country every day. And these are employees who were formerly part of the U.S. Customs Service before the creation of the Department of Homeland Security.
And how would the proposed regulations affect them in terms of civil service and union rights?
There are really three areas that these regulations focus on to eliminate or decrease the current employee rights. First, in the area of collective bargaining, these regulations set up a couple of new rules that severely limit the rights of unions to negotiate over working conditions for the employees who they represent. It would reduce the areas that we can negotiate on their behalf. It would provide that when there are disputes in the collective bargaining arena, that there is no independent review of those disputes. Any disputes would go to an internal DHS Labor Relations Board, so there would be no outside review of any disputes. And it would also allow the department to issue department-wide regulations that could void any collective bargaining language that is in place and that has been negotiated appropriately for the employees. In the area of employee appeals, if employees are proposed to have some discipline against them for either performance or for allegations that may or may not be proven to be true, today there are due process rights in place that ensure that employees have the right to challenge not only the facts, but also the appropriateness of the penalty. These new regulations would eliminate the ability of a third-party reviewer to determine that the penalty was not appropriate. Again, it sets up a process that only allows for internal review by the Department of Homeland Security. The third area is in the area of pay. They are creating a totally new pay system that is as yet undefined that will move from the system that has been in place and that was put in place to ensure that there was not favoritism, that there was objectivity to the system, and that employees would know what the rules were when it came to performance and to pay. But those rules will all be changed, and that is the one area that there is still not a lot of specificity, even with these new regulations.
And these regulations, so what is the process by which they would be implemented, and how are you challenging them?
These regulations were proposed over a year ago, and the regulations that were just issued are final regulations, and they will be put into effect. The department has the authority to put them into effect 30 days after they were issued, which would be at the end of this month. But we know that they are not prepared to implement them as written, and that it will most likely be the middle of June before they become effective for employees. But in the meantime, this is, even though these are final regulations, NTEU believes there are many flaws in these regulations that are harmful to the department, to the taxpayers who are depending on the employees in the department, and to the employees. First and foremost, we have filed a lawsuit against these regulations. We believe they violate the Homeland Security Act, which was written to ensure that employees have collective bargaining rights. And we believe that these regulations, as written, do not provide collective bargaining rights as were intended under the Homeland Security Act. We also believe that they are limiting the ability of other independent bodies to make decisions in the appeal process that the Department of Homeland Security does not have the authority to limit. So we have filed a lawsuit in federal court, and we will be proceeding in that form. In addition, we are working on Capitol Hill. There was already a hearing in the Senate last week at which NTU testified. We are hoping for a hearing on these final regulations in the House, and we are working with many members of Congress on our concerns on these issues, not only for these employees in the Department of Homeland Security, but as was said earlier, the administration intends to use these regulations as a model to impose across government into all agencies. And there are many problems with these regulations. We believe they should not even be imposed on Homeland Security employees, but they surely are not in any way valid or have been tested to be rolled out across government.
Colleen, doesn't this give us a tremendous amount of favoritism and politicizing the workforce in a very counterproductive or frightening way?
It definitely could. This is what employees are afraid of. The rules that are in place today under the Civil Service Reform Act and under the current compensation system were designed to avoid and eliminate exactly what you just described, Mimi. This is what employees fear, and we believe that this was not what Congress intended when they gave the department the authority to rewrite the rules.
Now, these regulations are for the Department of Homeland Security, but there are other regulations that are going to be put into effect dealing with first the Department of the Army, and then there are plans by the Bush administration to extend this more widely. Could you talk a bit about that?
Shortly after the Department of Homeland Security was created and was given this authority, the Department of Defense went to Congress and asked for the same authority. They just recently, just last week, issued proposed regulations. The regulations for defense are not yet final. They are out now for a 30-day comment period. They have the same flaws in them as I described in Homeland Security, but there are also some other elements that are the language is being looked at very closely because it sounds like there are even some things in there that are more harmful, perhaps, than are in Homeland Security. And one of the major concerns as they talk about rolling this across government is there is no doubt in my mind that this administration would choose the worst from both sets of regulations, and that is what they would be proposing government-wide.
So we got collective bargaining agreement under this rubric of Homeland Security regulation. I'm interested in the federal lawsuit, which I believe there are actually four unions.
Yes.
That are giving consideration to or actually have filed.
Yes, we have already filed.
What is the cause of action?
The cause of action is that we believe that the Homeland Security Act legislation that was passed in 2002 provided that employees would, and I'm quoting from that legislation, that employees may organize, bargain collectively, and participate through labor organizations of their own choosing in decisions which affect them. That is a statutory requirement of the Homeland Security Act. When you look at the language in the DHS regulations, what it allows in the area of collective bargaining does not rise to the level of what was intended by the HSA. We believe that it's illegal. We believe they're violating an existing law and the intent of Congress.
If these regulations were to go into effect both in Homeland Security and perhaps wider within the government, what's left for unions to do in the federal government? Are they effectively destroyed?
There are some who would like to think that that's what will happen, that unions would be effectively destroyed. But what the legislation, even or these regulations, even as written, what they replace negotiations with are what they call consult and confer rights. There are many opportunities where unions will continue to be the voice of employees and use every tool we have available to us, and that will include the courts, it will include working with Congress, it will include rallies, it will include mobilizing our members. But the other thing that is still there from an everyday standpoint is the fact that in the past, many employees have belonged to unions because they were afraid of independent actions that managers might take that were very subjective and that were inappropriate, that were focused on them rather than on what the rules really were and that they would not be implemented in a fair and objective manner. So employees who are facing those kinds of actions today will continue to face those kinds of actions, unfortunately, under the new regulations. We believe even more so. And in every one of those cases, unions will be standing there with their members, defending their rights, arbitrating their cases. The right to arbitrate continues to be there under these regulations. the right to challenge whether they are suspensions or removals. This whole issue of pay for performance, which is the buzzword that the administration is using to move everyone off of the current compensation system that does have rules in it, this pay for performance will raise a whole new area for employees who, every time they receive an evaluation, they will be told whether or not they receive any kind of a pay increase, and every one of those performance ratings will be grievable, and the unions will be standing there with the employees to do everything we can to impose a system that is fair and credible and transparent for employees. So while I believe the intent of those who drafted the regulations was to try to hamper and decrease the effectiveness of unions, I think that, and I can tell you from our experience to date with these regulations, the effect has been just the opposite. Employees who are good employees in their own right, and there are hundreds of thousands of them in the federal government, who believed that they could deal with issues themselves and did not need to be a part of a union, recognize that these issues, these threats now, are much bigger than something that one individual can deal with alone. And they recognize the power of standing together with the unions and knowing that it's the unions who are going to be able to change the rules, even if it takes a little longer than we would like that to be.
Colleen, I just want to also ask you about, there was a recent law that was passed by Congress and signed by the president, which really seriously threatens the privacy of American taxpayers. I just wanted to give a sense of the breadth of what is being enacted under the guise of protection, aka Homeland Security. Could you speak to that for a moment?
This is on the privatization issue of the
Yes. Tax
collection? Maybe?
Yes.
Yes, just before the end of the year, language was included in the jobs bill that will allow the IRS to hire private collection agencies to do the tax collection work of the IRS. So when taxpayers have a tax liability, instead of dealing with IRS employees to make arrangements for that payment or to make the payment, they could be dealing with private collection agencies. And these collection agencies will be paid by keeping up to 25% of what they collect. So in addition to disclosure and privacy issues, because now all of this tax information could be moved into the hands of these private collection agencies. In addition to that, we believe that there is a real risk of very aggressive and inappropriate collection tactics. This industry is one that is reported to the Federal Trade Commission as the industry that has the most complaints against it, and you're now offering them 25% of any taxes that they collect, that they keep. And as you said, there are all of the privacy and tax information issues. And this law has been passed. This is not proposed, it is not tentative, it is not maybe. It has been passed. And as we speak, the IRS is moving forward to identify collection agencies that they will start moving this work to.
Colleen, for those workers who are concerned about this and also the public concerned about how this would affect them, what should they do to talk about this and protest?
Well, every taxpayer should be concerned about this because there are no rules within the legislation that was passed that define or limit what kind of taxpayers or taxpayer accounts can be given to the collection agencies. There is also no requirement that this work be done by agencies in the United States. This work could be moved outside of the country. There is no limitation in the legislation. So I would hope that all taxpayers would contact their congressional representatives, their senators, and they would let them know that they just learned of this, that they are opposed to it, that they are concerned about it, and that they would ask their representatives to take action to roll this back so that it is the IRS and IRS employees who are doing the work of the IRS and collecting the taxes of the federal government and no one else.
And this, of course, concerns also the breaking of the unions and the depoliticization of the federal service. So people should complain about that also in most strong terms. And we'd like to thank Colleen Kelly, who's the president of the National Treasury Employees Union, for being with us.
Thank you.
summoning and heralding our pain, allowing us to release our emotion, trumpeter Wynton Marsalis and his tribute to Ossie Davis. Ossie Davis reads the statement of Eugene Debs, one-time candidate on the Socialist Party ticket for President of the United States, to the court on September 18, 1918, after he was convicted of violating the Sedition Act, a law passed by Congress to promote the war by banning anti-war expression. Under the law, many socialists were prosecuted and stripped of their freedom of speech. Then Dennis Rivera, president of District 1199, speaks of Ossie's contributions to building the organized labor movement, and actor Avery Brooks caps off the tribute to Ossie by reading from Ossie's Pearly Victorious.
Your Honor, years ago I recognized my kinship with all living beings, and I made up my mind that I was not one bit better than the meanest of earth. I said then, I say now, that while there is a lower class, I am in it. While there is a criminal element, I am of it. And while there is a soul in prison, I am not free. Your Honor, I have stated in this court that I am opposed to the form of our present government, that I am opposed to the social system in which we live, that I believe in the change of both, but by perfectly peaceable and orderly means. Let me call your attention to the fact this morning that in this system, 5% of our people own and control 2/3 of our wealth. 65% of the people, embracing the working class who produce all wealth, have but 5% to show for it. Your Honor, I ask no mercy. I plead no immunity. I realize that finally the right must prevail. I never more clearly comprehended than now the great struggle between the powers of greed on the one hand and upon the other the rising hosts of freedom. I can see the dawn of a better humanity. The people are awakening. In due course of time, they will come to their own. When the mariner, sailing over tropic sea, looks for relief from his weary watch, he turns his eyes towards the Southern Cross, burning luridly above the tempest-vexed ocean. As the midnight approaches, the Southern Cross begins to bend, and the whirling worlds change their places, and with starry finger points, the Almighty marks the passage of time upon the dial of the universe. And though no bell may beat the glad tidings, the lookout knows that the midnight is passing, that relief and rest are close at hand. Let the people take heart and hope everywhere, for the cross is bending. The midnight is passing, and joy cometh with the morning.
Ossie Davis, a friend, a comrade, a hero to the working people around the world. Ossie's association with the Healthcare Workers Union 1199-SEIU goes back 50 years when he was 37 years old. It began when Ossie wrote and performed a dramatization for our members of the Mississippi lynching in 1955 of black teenager Emmett Till. Ossie and Ruby provided constant guidance and support for our union Bread and Roses cultural program, bringing culture to the workplace. Ossie came to the aid of Union Democracy Forces at a moment in the 1980s of great division within our organization. Had he not eloquently advised and publicly supported our movement at that time, our organization of 250,000 strong today probably would not have existed. I think the history of Lawrence Hospital in Bronxville, New York, best illustrates Ossie's and Ruby's lifelong commitments to the rights of working people. Bronxville is a wealthy community just over the city line in Westchester County. Back in 1965, when Ossie was 47 years of age, many of the hospital workers in Bronxville were paid so little that they worked full-time and still qualified for public assistance. 1199 was in those years just getting started in organizing hospital workers. The Lawrence workers heard about it, and the majority of them signed union cards. But the hospital wouldn't even talk to the workers about a union. Most of the workers were African American, so it was a civil rights issue as well as a labor issue. Finally, the workers voted to strike for union recognition. They were out for 55 days, and on most of those days, Ossie and Ruby, who lived nearby, were with those workers on the picket line, encouraging them and calling them on management to observe the basic principles of justice and decency. We lost that strike. The Lawrence workers had no union until 2001. In that year, the Lawrence workers organized again. They demonstrated for union recognition with rallies outside the hospital. And once again, at 83, Ossie David was there, talking with workers, walking with them on the picket line, addressing their issues. And at this time, to make a very important point about his lifetime commitment to our organization, he brought his grandson with him. Today, the workers at Lawrence Hospitals have a union contract, thanks to Ossie Davis. They also have the memory of having walked with a giant. We all have that memory. Whether it was opposing the wars in Vietnam or Iraq, marching for justice with Dr. King, supporting workers' rights, or any of the hundreds of other vital issues, Ossie made the hard decisions, always took action, and he never gave up. We were lucky. He was here for us, and it will be an honor to try in our own small ways to live up to his legacy.
Tonight, my friend, I find in being black a thing of beauty, a joy, a strength, a secret cup of gladness. A native land in neither time nor place. A native land in every Negro face. Be loyal to yourselves, your skin, your hair, your lips, your southern speech, your laughing kindness are Negro kingdoms vast as any other. Accept in full the sweetness of your blackness, not wishing to be red, nor white, nor yellow, nor any other race or face but this. Farewell, my deep and Africanic brothers. Be brave. Keep freedom in the family. Do what you can for the white folks. And write to me in care of the post office. Now, may the Constitution of the United States go with you. The Declaration of Independence stand by you. And the Bill of Rights protect you, and the State Commission Against Discrimination keep the eyes of the law upon you henceforth, now, and forevermore. Amen.
And this has been Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And you can reach us at knash@igc.org. That's knash@igc.org.